Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 11:27 a.m. and Central Time. Today is November 25th. I thought we'd kick off with Brazil because Brazil has raised rates by 565 basis points this year. And inflation's running at 11%. So they still have negative real interest rates despite the fact that they've got a world-beating overnight rate. And it means that you're still losing money if you were to buy that overnight rate. So obviously we are getting a big divergence here because inflationary problems are running riot in a number of different countries, and it's a global problem. In a country like Brazil, where commodity prices are ramping higher, eventually we're going to start to see capital inflows. And it's really only a matter of time before that starts. So Arabica coffee prices have broken out. So we really need to look at more than a decade of data to get a real comprehension of how big this base formation is. And we have plenty of experience over many years of seeing a significant spikes in coffee prices. And generally it lasts for a season, and then it usually happens in the low part of the cycle for the 2 year cycle for production of coffee, and then things get better the year after. Of course, we did have a frost in Brazil earlier on this year, and that's contributed to a lack of supply. And then some of the other significant exports would be iron ore. Well, iron ore prices have come down hard over the course of the second half of this year. They're beginning to steady around the area where the initial portion of the rally took off from in the middle of last year. But there are big questions about what happens with Chinese steel production. But one thing that I think is particularly relevant is that in Chengdu, they have started to ease up on some of the restrictions on property development. And Chengdu is one of the largest cities in China. So that's a positive development. It's also the capital of the Sichuan province, which is a long way from Beijing. So it might be just a signal for what we could anticipate to happen in other cities as we head into 2022. And of course, more property development would imply greater demand for steel. So that should be beneficial for places like Brazil as well. Of course, Brazil is dealing, and much of Latin America are dealing, with a record drought. And that is also contributing to the relative strength of soybeans. So soybean prices continue to steady around the 1200 cent level, and that's the upper side of the base formation. And there's the potential that if it can break back above the 200-day moving average, then there'll be the potential for additional upside. So as we look at what are the potential catalysts for interest in places like Brazil and other commodity-related markets, well, then there's certainly the potential that with industrial metal prices pushing on and continuing to hold this uptrend overall, with copper prices continuing to steady from the region of the trend mean, there's the scope, at least, for interest to start to flow back into some of these stock markets. But of course, we don't have a lot of evidence for it yet. And a good part of the reason for that, despite the fact that the Bovespa was up about 1.5% today, it's because the currency continues to decline. So it's not trending lower in a really exaggerated manner, but it's not rallying either. And until we see some confirmation of just demand returning to dominance for currencies outside of the dollar, then it's going to be a hard argument for investors to justify in investing in other regions. And that's why Wall Street continues to attract capital. So when we look at the euro, it's trending downwards. And it's oversold in the short term. There's no question of that. But we haven't seen anything in the way of upper dynamics to check the decline yet either. Europe is in a very different situation today than it was a decade ago, because they are now deploying simultaneous monetary and fiscal stimulus. And the ECB has said repeatedly that they don't want to raise interest rates and that they're still sticking to the transitory inflation mantra, despite the fact that inflation in the region is at the highest it's been in an awfully long time. And Japan is in a similar set of circumstances. In fact, they are still holding on to their yield curve control mantra, and they're actively devaluing the yen, and this continues to look like an uptrend for the US dollar. So that's certainly contributing to less interest in the Nikkei from the perspective of an international investor. The Nikkei remains steady, and I think it's more likely than not that it is going to break successfully above the 30,000 level. But when we redenominated it into just any other currency, then what we get instead is a significant trend of underperformance for most of this year. It's still holding the region of the trend mean, however, even in US dollar terms. Now, when we start to see interest flowing back into some of these markets, well, we're obviously then going to have to have a rationale for that. So it's either going to have to be outsized growth, or there'll be a rationale other than currencies, or the dollar is going to have to roll over. Well, we've had a big move in the dollar over the course of the last 4 weeks, and it is overbought in the short term. And as long as it remains firm, it's going to continue to lend support to Wall Street overall. Well, then when we think about some of the other factors that are outstanding, well, Brent crude prices are still quite steady. And obviously, this is a rather inert day today because of the Thanksgiving holiday in the USA. So we don't get a lot of big moves. But the most important point here is that the consuming nations are trying to basically talk the market down, and the producers, they don't have much interest in that. And when we're in a politically charged environment where the major producers are not investing in new supply, well, then the reality is that it's giving more power to OPEC and Russia, and they're going to try and pressure prices higher because it helps their fiscal position. And until we see a significant supply of new oil and gas coming through from non-OPEC sources, and particularly onshore unconventional supply in the USA, then prices are going to continue to remain firm. The shale producers at these prices are very profitable, and they're accruing cash flow at a considerable pace because they're not expending a lot of money on drill programs. So that's helping to support the oil price, it's helping to support the energy sector overall. Ultimately, they're going to have to start drilling again, and that should create demand for drilling services. And this is one of the most depressed sectors anywhere. And we can just get lots of back history, and the reality today is that Halliburton is trading not far off of where it traded in the middle of the credit crisis back in 2008. When we think about the outlook for energy overall, well, we've had a fair bit of volatility in the uranium sector, but the ETF continues to hold the sequence of higher reaction lows. And this continues to be, I think, a growth sector overall. Ultimately, we have to come up with an answer for base load. And The reality is that when you get frosty weather, the wind stops blowing. Well, obviously the sun doesn't stop shining, but in Northern Europe, you don't get a whole pile of sun in the middle of winter. Obviously this is a significant challenge. When we think about coal-fired power stations, well, then they are ramping up their facilities right now. So Drax Group in the UK is the last of the big coal-fired power station shares, and it continues to extend the breakout from its base formation. Then I think it's also relevant that some of the metallurgical coal companies, having pulled back over the course of the last 2 months, are now beginning to steady as well. So that should help to support the view as well that we're going to have more steel production. Some companies like ArcelorMittal have been in these extraordinarily long base formations for really what feels like forever. But that or any kind of argument to suggest that they're going to be able to sustain moves up and out of these base formations is going to be tied to restrictions on Chinese steel production. And that really does help to highlight that there are a lot of people around the world watching what happens in China, because what happens in terms of the property sector and property development and land sales in China is something that is going to have a very long and fat tail for the commodity exporting countries around the world. We've had a significant pullback in gold, and the price is beginning to steady in the region of the $1,800 area, but we have not yet seen a significant rebound. We did see a little bit of a bounce today in platinum. Silver prices remain in the region of the low from early this year and excuse me, this month, and we still have the sequence of higher reaction lows from the low in October, but we need more dynamic moves on the upside in order to confirm a return to demand dominance. And the platinum price is testing the $1,000 area, but it absolutely needs to do better than that in order to really demonstrate a return to demand dominance. And palladium prices, having pulled back in an extraordinarily dynamic manner earlier this week, have steadied in the region of the September and October lows, but this looks like a completing top formation. And the big difference between palladium and the other precious metals is that it's been rallying for years already, and it's up, or I guess between the lows in 2016, when we had the initial rebound in the precious metals sector, then just about everything else went sideways. But palladium kept going and really went up six times between 2016 and 2021. And that now does look like it's over. We have the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. We'd failed upside breaks, and then we had the failure in the region of the 200-day moving average, and we're coming down from extremely exaggerated levels. It also suggests that the kinds of cars that are going to be manufactured in the future are more likely than not going to be electric vehicles. And then we think about some of the big automotive companies, rather than thinking about Volkswagen, which is in the headlines. Daimler Group is right in the region of its peaks in US dollar terms. And in euro or local currency terms, it's testing the peak from back in 2015. And then Volkswagen has been susceptible to an extraordinary amount of volatility. So we've had a massive move on the upside, and now we're seeing it pulling back in a very exaggerated fashion. There's a great deal of money getting spent right now on retooling, and this is creating demand for lithium. And there's a global effort underway to increase supply, and this is we had the, I guess the way to think about this is we had the initial investments in lithium back in the early portion of the decade. Then that lithium came to market well in advance of the demand for batteries picking up. So we didn't have any additional new investment in lithium mining. Now we see outsized demand for batteries, and every automotive company is really exaggerating their demand. So we're seeing more investment in lithium mining. But these things take time, and we're just not at a point yet where a lot of lithium can be brought to market. And it's a similar story for copper. There's a lot more demand for copper, and it takes years to bring a world-class copper mine to fruition. It's also worth considering that for gold miners, there haven't been new major gold discoveries in 4 years. So it means that the gold miners are certainly in the market for acquisitions, and it suggests that there will be M&A activity. And the vast majority of miners today are in profitable positions. We saw that Hochschild had pulled back in a very violent manner earlier in the week and then started to rebound over the last 2 days. That was pricing in the potential for political volatility in Peru. And the government there came through today and said that they're going to allow more investment, and they're going to allow Hochschild to go ahead with their expansion plans. So the share is beginning to rebound. But they have an all-in sustaining price in the region of about $13 for silver, and the price right now is in the 20s. So even in view of the fact that there's been this extraordinary uncertainty, which is now being dispelled, the company is still making almost 100% on it in terms of its margins, and it's been completely disabused by or abused by investors. The price coming from 300 to below 100 this week. So investors aren't willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the mining sector. There is this prevailing view that the miners are capital destroyers, and that investing in them is like throwing good money after bad. So this is obviously a very difficult environment for miners. It means that they're going to have difficulty raising money to invest in new mines. It also greatly enhances the potential for M&A activity, because the only kinds of investments that will get permissioned are those that where the resources have been proven up. And this, I think, is one of the most important points, because if we're not going to have a very easy way to build new mines, there's not going to be new supply. And if there isn't going to be new supply, well, then that helps to support the price environment. And it's not like we don't have a lot of money being being supplied through monetary and fiscal accommodation. The one thing that just about every government everywhere agrees on is in the need for infrastructure development, and this is a global phenomenon. So it's likely that prices for commodities are going to continue to rally. But I think the big linchpin for the transition away from a concentration on growth and momentum and into the commodity complex, well, let's, for example, look at the FTSE 350 mining index. And this index, it looked like it was going to break successfully higher. Then it found support in the region of the underlying trend and pulled back very violently this week. I really don't see much potential for it to fall very much beyond where it has already fallen, but it's not trending higher in the same way that the Nasdaq is. There isn't a lot of faith, but most particularly, there isn't a lot of urgency to invest outside of Wall Street right now, because by investing in Wall Street, investors have the ESG mantra. They, because of the focus on technology firms, they have the currency and growth in their favor, and they have the fact that the USA is somewhat closer to normalizing policy. Doesn't mean that they're going to normalize policy, but at least they're talking about it more in a more strident terms than everywhere else. So there's a little bit more surety there. And until that changes, then we're going to continue to see Wall Street outperforming. But the bullish case for investing everywhere else, and particularly in the commodity complex, is becoming more convincing by the day. Ultimately, some of these places, like Brazil, are going to get control of their inflationary problem, and interest rates would probably be significantly higher by that time. When we think about the government bond yield in places like that, well, it is trending higher, and we can see that 2-year bonds have a yield of 12%. So it's just about a positive carry, or a positive real yield. These are extraordinarily high levels, and ultimately, these high yields will become attractive to investors. And we're only just beginning to see a pause right now. But when inflation is starting to look like it's going to be brought back under control, well, then these kinds of markets are going to become extremely attractive to international investors. And ultimately, when the dollar's dominance begins to wane, then these types of markets have the potential to rally in a very profound manner. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving.